You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, this week, joined by my entire crew. Yes! Woohoo! Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Nicole Hale, we're all here. Yeah. So, for those of you in America, we hope you enjoyed your Turkey Day. For those in other parts of the world, welcome to capitalism. And now, as our Black Friday thing encroaches on you. it is Fanboy versus the 698.
Is that like the 198?
It is like the 198. It's also like the...
Except people actually care about this one.
It's more like the 411, I think.
Oh, but, you done for the 411 and the 698?
Yeah.
Fan, good buddy. Roger, roger. That's a 40-40?
I don't understand a thing you just said.
No. Anyway, 698, as in Amazing Spider-Man 698, came out this week.
He just asked for your location twice, which was kind of interesting.
Wow.
Oh, interesting. Did I?
Well, oh, why are you asking like for our location, Feely?
Where are you? Why are you there? So
I'm actually already inside the house.
The call is coming from inside the computer. So anyway, we will be talking Spider-Man 698 at the end of the show. So this is your early warning. If you have not read it and you don't want to be spoiled for it, please don't watch the end of the show.
Even if you don't want to be spoiled for it, still go read it.
Yeah, I mean, you should still read it, obviously. We wouldn't be talking about it or recommending it if you didn't. This is a great jumping on point if you want to get into Superior Spider-Man as it's coming on. This seems to be the lead up to it, so you should read it. But if you haven't, please don't spoil yourself.
It's what's for dinner.
It's what's for dinner.
They missed our lovely pre-show conversation, though.
So, yes. So anyway, so there you go. Welcome to the show. Everybody have a good break.
Hi.
Hey.
Everybody have a good break? Good break time? Yeah. Mm-hmm. My two fellow Americans, did you have a good Turkey Day?
I spent most of it sick. I'm still kind of sick.
Sick?
Yeah, remember that show that I was supposed to be on 2 weeks ago and I couldn't because I had no voice?
Yeah. No.
That.
Oh, that one. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that one.
I didn't have turkey for Turkey Day. I don't like turkey, so.
There's a lot of people not doing the turkey for the Turkey Day, so.
Dude, we had like three turkeys. We murdered a family of turkeys.
Good lord.
Made up for her lack of turkey.
Wow. Man.
Yeah, I had brisket instead.
Yeah, there's a lot of people doing that. There are people doing barbecue or brisket or pork or something. You can't do pork for Thanksgiving. You're supposed to do pork for Christmas. You're supposed to.
Yeah.
Oh, we do turkey for Christmas. That's what we do.
Right. Yeah, and we do it the other way.
Backwards world do you live in, McFeely? Jeez.
We live in the world that invented it. So
I was
going to
say, I think they did it. I think they did it before we did. But so yeah. So
you
okay.
You invented Christmas? I thought that was Israel.
Right. Have you not seen A Christmas Carol? Have you not heard of the Christmas Goose? You know, it's like it's a thing
what
they do.
What day is this?
What day is
what
it?
Day
what day is it?
Christmas Day, huh?
Oh, fuck you, Charles Dickens.
Oh, no. Come on, go. Christmas Carol's the best.
Anyway, so what news?
Not Christmas Day today yet. Not yet.
What Come news have you, sir? Also, you may recycle your video. Maybe it's spinning on me.
It's acting funny on my end. Well, there's not a heck of a lot of news. Because despite the fact that we've been away for 2 weeks, they just ain't. We had the announcement, Marvel have announced for March, that the long-awaited, well, long-trailed Age of Ultron is finally happening.
It is so old that it's not even going to be, it's not even going to be the Superior Spider-Man in it. It's going to be.
I know.
That had to be specified that it's like, okay, well, this is coming out, but it's supposed to, but the events take place before.
I love it when I get a comic that says that, when it has like a little quotation at the beginning. It's like, takes place before, you know, Action Comics number 8 or something. Like when I was reading the Action Comics
this
manual.
It takes place before the birth of Christ at this present.
Yeah.
this thing can run on it. Yeah, this is something that has been trailed across the very first arc of Bendis's Heroic Age Avengers. There was a whole point one issue dedicated to the prologue of it, which was reprinted for Marvel's Free Comic Book Day offering. And last year's point one as well contained some trailer information, contained a new trailer story for it as well. So it's been a long time coming. It's going to be 10 issues, the first five of which are going to be drawn by Brian Hitch, and the second five of which are going to be by Hitch and Carlos Pacheco, and I think someone else is Carlos Pacheco. I've actually forgotten who the other artists are at this point. But it's like, yeah, all that time, Brian Hitch still couldn't even bang out 10 issues. I know they say it's for story reasons. They say that there's a reason that there aren't, but I don't buy it.
You know, if you keep...
Time travel, dude. Time travel.
Yeah, especially once all the writers for these books...
Carlos's art could be in the future, and then Hitch's could be in the present. Well, we know the whole Ultron thing goes always expanding into the future and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's all time travel and everything. So, I mean, that's the... This is 10 issues, and they're coming out between March and July, which would mean it's bi-monthly. Not bi-monthly, bi-weekly. Two a month. I'm going to buy it, but I have to say any level of excitement I had for it is, like, way down there at this stage, because it's just... Any illusion it could possibly have of mattering in any capacity has just been so stamped out by how completely shufflable it's proven to be.
Well, and just by the fact that, again, we know it's taking place not in the present. You know, I mean, it's taking place at a time before the current, you know, timeline. So that makes it seem...
There are going to be tie-in issues in other comics.
So
I don't know what's going to happen there.
It's so far delayed that it's pointless. I mean, it probably... It's hopefully it'll be a good story.
Bendis is writing it. And well, it's essentially their showcase event for this year. And it's a big Avengery thing. Who finished off their run on Avengers this week?
Yeah.
You know, it sort of seems like it should be those issues that are coming out this week, which I've been reading them. Those issues aren't bad, but, you know, the whole Ultron thing's left over from the beginning, and you kind of thought, well, that's how it's going to end anyway. You know,
we're not talking about it, obviously, but I read Bendis' first issue of X-Men, and it was so slow. And so
I thought it was a fine issue.
It was a fine issue, but in the sense that of things that actually happened, it's again, another one of those examples where there are other better writers where that would have taken place in the first, you know, quarter or half of the book. You know, we would have been on to something more interesting other than where we were at by the end of that book. But
so I haven't read that, so no recommendation to pick that up.
Did you see the you saw the bit that was in like the preview book that showed Beast, you know, in the back in time recruiting the original X-Men?
Nope.
Okay.
Sorry.
It might half be worth it then, but that's like where the first book ends up, and so it's kind of like, oh, okay.
I thought it was probably one of the better examples of Bendis writing a team book, which historically we know he's not good at.
It wasn't a team book. It was a Beast issue.
Well, I mean, it was still he juggled his characters fairly well. Compared
so you're saying an Avenger shows up in an X-Men comic? Yeah. He's writing the Beast.
I mean, essentially, that was a Beast issue with other characters showing up. I wouldn't say that was like a team where like people got real, you know, real coverage or time. But I digress.
The Beast sit at a table and have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, that didn't happen because there was no food involved.
No, but there was a scene of people sitting around a table talking.
There was. Yeah, that did happen.
Okay.
Yeah, that did happen. So, anyway, I'm sorry. I digress. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, Age of Ultron's happening. Let's get excited for that. That's in March. Really, the only other piece of news now that happened in the last 2 weeks is kind of an unpleasant little thing that happened when Tony Harris, who is the artist of Ex Machina, and he was the artist of James Robinson's Starman as well, posted a bit of a rant. I say a bit of a rant. On his Facebook, just utterly decrying cosplayers, and just like a really really sexist rant, just calling not male cosplayers, women specifically, using
right specifically female
for women, saying that they're not real geeks and that, you know, they're just con hot.
I'm not a real geek.
You're Nicole. You're just using your breasts as a way to entice us poor, defenseless.
And all you want is the attention of people, of guys that you would never give the time of day in the real world.
Right.
Like that. Yeah. He legitimately said stuff like that.
Yeah.
I hate geeky men. I would never date geeky men. You know that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really just for the attention.
It was quite shocking. I don't know why. Okay, is it my imagination? Like, or and it seems to be like in the last couple of months to a year that this fake geek girl thing sprang into being, where like guys have started to accuse girls of not being real geeks.
Hot girls.
That is an
attractive women.
Stipulation.
Well, and that's been and I think. I don't know.
Don't fit the preconceived notion of what the nerd is. Like, really, these smoldering hot toned women who dress up in these costumes at conventions.
I mean,
well, does it matter? Some people, that's their geek, is dressing up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think.
It doesn't matter whose attention you get. If they get a thrill off of it, let them.
I mean, I think honestly, I mean, the sexist thing was a part of it as far as Harris's rant. Like, I read it a couple times and really tried to parse it out. But the things I gathered from it and the things that concerned me about it, I mean, was one, you know, this idea of women in the fandom. And I think there's always this idea that for some reason women can't, you know, be true geeks for some reason. That, you know, just because they don't have a phallus, they can't really understand comic books.
Well, I know plenty of women that have, you know, several different palaces in their collection.
I meant one built in.
Okay. JD, just stop.
Right.
Just stop. So the reviews are
right. but I think that there's another thing that is sort of creeping in as well that seemed to creep into the rant, which was just sort of the idea of like fake nerds in general. And this is a discussion I had with someone else on Twitter, which became this idea that somehow being a geek or being into comics is sort of like this elitist thing. You know, their argument, this person I talked to, their argument was that, they had read like all this X-Men stuff in the 90s and they're really familiar with it. And they took that as like a badge of honor. I'm like, well, that's great. But, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't appreciate other things or that because someone doesn't know about that, doesn't mean that they don't have an appreciation of comics. And isn't the idea to broaden the spectrum? I mean, it's not like the comic book companies are out there going, if we had fewer, you know, fans, if only fewer people would buy comic books, you know. And again, their argument tended to be that, well, they're clogging up. And I think this kind of is what got into the cosplay part, which is like, well, these people that are dressing up are sort of clogging up our convention. Before, we had this pure convention of true fans, you know, that knew the material.
Oh, not that phrase.
You know, and now these, you know,
okay,
just because...
Let me ask you this. Would you guys be offended to see...
We lost Nicole.
We lost Nicole.
You there?
So, would you guys be offended to see more sexy girls at conventions, really?
I mean, I don't care. That's not...
I refuse to answer that on the grounds that it may incriminate me.
I mean...
I'm just going to say no.
Do I enjoy the human figure? Absolutely. But that's not really what we're talking about. I mean, that's not... I don't think that's really at the heart of the discussion. You know, I think you know, for Tony Harris's part... I think his thing is that he sees women as people who can't really be fans. There has to be some other explanation. They have to want attention or whatever. So, you know, they're clogging up his convention, you know, of true fans by trying to be, you know, girly and out there. And just because maybe he flirted with one or two and they didn't reciprocate, I don't know. I mean, that's complete conjecture.
Don't careful now.
Yeah, I mean, that's complete conjecture.
The lawyers died on us.
You know, but no. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if that's the case, but I know that some people have made that argument for themselves. I'll put it that way. you know, some people get the deal where it's like they get turned down or whatever, and that's where you get that where they wouldn't, you know, give the time of day. And, you know, again, it's like just because you see something, you know, just because you visually experience something doesn't mean you get the whole thing, you know. You know, you can look at a human form and appreciate it for what it is. Triplet is frozen with this really bad smile that's making this conversation seem creepy. But I'm saying, like, just because you... Just because you see it doesn't mean you get the whole thing, you know? It's fine to go, oh, well, that's very attractive, and then move on. But just because it's there doesn't mean it's there for you. You know what I mean? That's not necessarily there for your enjoyment. Maybe it's there for their enjoyment. Crazy idea. People would do things for themselves rather than, you know, for someone else's attention.
I mean, I think a lot of it is, I don't want to call it tribalism, because that makes it sound like I'm
but it is that
overthinking
way.
The psychology of the thing. But it's like a lot of these guys grew up with this stigma. You know, in these pre-internet, in those pre-internet days, whenever it did mean social ostracizing to be labeled a geek. And with the advent of the internet and the ability of fandoms to coalesce and really celebrate all these nerdy pursuits and things they enjoy, and it has become, a lot of geeks, I'm proud to call myself a geek, we've taken the word back, as
right.
it were. You know, it's not a negative anymore. But now, in large part thanks to things like the internet and the increasing spread of, let's say, the Marvel movies from the last couple of years, Avengers, prime example, this stuff is widening in appeal. Other people are interested in this. And because so many of these, like, you know, unhappy young men have perhaps grown up to be unhappy middle-aged men, grew up and you know, it's viewed as an intrusion into something that that was theirs, and that they feel is sort of being taken away from them.
Yes.
And when what it is really is a victory.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, is that people wanting to be into the stuff we're into should actually be a win for us. It should be a tick in the win column. Where we've actually gone, we told you.
I mean, that's what you're saying. They finally broke down that wall, you know, where you don't have to be ashamed of it. Look, you know, it's cool. You see the shirts and stuff, and people want to start up a conversation. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, and again, I mean, we're adding people, you know, we're adding people to the fold. We're making it bigger. We're making it, you know, broader. I like part of the conversation I had with this individual. I'm not naming their name because I don't have their permission to, but
just call him Bob.
We'll call him Bob.
Bob said this.
Bob said, so I was talking to Bob and, Bob said, well, you know, like I have a test, and if I'm talking to a person and I say, who killed Batman's parents? And if they say the Joker, I just walk away. And I was like, well, I understand why you would make that, you know, distinction, but that is a right answer.
Yeah.
You know,
I would have accepted Jack Nicholson as an answer.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I'm like, that may not be the comic book answer, but that is an answer. Why not use that as a gateway, as a spark for conversation?
I would have hooked the person if he said Cesar Romero. I would have just gave him
But it's like, but that's like what I'm talking about. It's like there's people that are only familiar with the films. Why don't we use this as a gateway to, you know, help them say, well, that's an, you know, I see why you said that. So you're a fan of the films, you know, that's very much like this particular comic. Have you ever read it? And use that as a gateway to maybe, you know, move people into being fans of comic books. Cause those of us who are fans of comic books, we're not going to suffer from more people liking comic books. You know, that's more money for the industry. That's more stuff for us to read. This is a good thing. Why are we trying to ruin it by saying, no, you have tits. You can't possibly understand comics, you know?
But
I don't know how to read and look at pictures.
Your boobs get in the way, Nicole. Your breasts get in the way of reading a comic book properly. You can't hold it right. Really, you have to hold it above or below your boobs, and you can't. Anyway, I'm sorry. What?
I kind of feel like we need to rename the show Fan Person versus
Fan
Man.
Person.
I'm a little offended by the name of our show.
You know, honestly, I'm not a huge fan of it, but we're 126 issues in, episodes in, and I don't know how to change it now.
Okay, I'm the only girl here, and I don't find the name offensive.
Hey, you know, though, the mere fact that we have, like, a woman on this show, though, is, like, a testament to, like, how we try to, you know, be a part of that group that, again, is saying it's like, yes, women can. I mean, Nicole's a bigger comic book fan than most guys I know, just because
trust
most...
me, my comic book shop guy loves me for all the stuff that I buy from him.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, why would we try and exclude someone like Nicole, who's obviously a huge fan, you know, and just because I know guys who claim to be fans that aren't, you know what I mean?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, and
I
like...
I won't deny that I there are times when I get a little bit... being a retailer and having to deal with, like, all the many tiers of fandom.
Sure.
There are times when I just sort of pinch the brow of my nose, you know. I grant you, it's really more of a monetary thing.
Yeah.
Where someone will come in and claim to be the biggest Green Lantern fan on the face of the earth after reading 3 out of sequence issues of Green Lantern Core.
Yeah.
you know, that's a true story. But then I stop and I think, you know what? He's enjoying the friggin' comic. It's so much more than a lot of other people are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
wait. You say that, Chris, but now tell me about the Chucky fans.
No, they can all burn in hell.
Oh, I don't know. I know you've mentioned, like, Spawn a lot, too. We mentioned the people that are still, like, looking for Spawn stuff, and I mentioned that.
Oh, my gosh, there's a guy that goes to my bookstore and buys every variant of Spawn. He spent $50
sure.
on one.
My God.
But,
I got a friend.
But I think...
out of a year.
But...
I got a friend that was shocked to find out Spawn is still being published.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
He's like, are you telling me that they published that book past 1992? And I said, yes, I see it in previews. I don't know if it actually comes out, but I see a listing in previews every once in a while.
But, you know, I was trying to poke fun at it.
Okay to make targets, I don't.
But I was trying to poke fun at it, and I think my shopkeep kind of brought it back around for me because, you know, he was like, because I was saying something about, you know, Spawn or whatever, and he was like, yeah, I've got it. You want to buy it? You know?
And then, buy it. I can't get rid of it.
But it's but that's kind of true, too. It's like...
Yeah, this guy that comes into my comic book shop I go to, you would never guess he's a Spawn fan. He's about 60 years old. He always comes in with a business suit and his little briefcase so he could put it in there so nothing gets bent. And I'm like, holy crap.
But still, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, there's nothing wrong with that.
That's not the image I have of Spawn fans, no.
And I'm not going to say those people aren't comic book fans. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not going to label them. I don't have a right to label someone as a fan or not. It's like if they want to say that they're a fan of it and they read it and they buy stuff or they watch things, they just watch the movies, that's fine. Those are all viable things. I mean, if there's one thing we know in comic books, there's a lot of universes, a lot of things get retconned, a lot of things get changed. So there's no reason to say that just because you only know one thing doesn't mean you're not a real fan. You know, like I said, like again, you go back to the Joker thing, you know. It's like, just because someone thinks that the Joker killed Batman's parents, well, they did.
Batman is a prime example of something that transcends all levels of perception, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's possible for a child in a playground to run around with their Batman costume on, or a septuagenarian to enjoy, I don't know, anything you care to name. And where, you know, it's still, even as much as we were talking about finding victories and people enjoying geeky stuff or whatever, you know, a lot of small-minded people, teenagers particularly, will make fun of older people or younger people for reading comics. Nobody makes fun of anybody for liking Batman.
Yeah.
Batman is universal. Yeah. Batman has the kind of multi-generational, cross-media, just transcendental appeal that characters from all walks of literature wish they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
well,
and then you can
talk about which Batman you like, or how about
exactly
Robin,
right.
You know, how
right.
many different Robins
of different
are there?
Interpretations of
right.
Batman that there are.
Mm-hmm.
There's no right way. I mean, even if you just want to say, oh, I just like the comics. What do you like? Do you like the 1930s stuff, like the pre-crisis? Do you like the post-crisis, Zero Hour, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, New 52? What do you got?
Right.
Nothing. You know.
I like the comics where Batman beats up some dude.
Yeah.
I like comics that doesn't involve Damien as a douchebag.
But how many people to bring it around like a male equivalent though? Like, talking about saying that these girls that, like, read one issue and then put on a costume and go to a Comic-Con, how is that different from, like, the guys that get a tattoo of, like, a Superman logo that have never read an issue?
There is that. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to deny my own biases again. Sometimes I do see these big, beefy, cut bros going around in their tight little friggin' Batman shirts, and I'm like, you know, Batman comic, yeah. But that's really more from a retailer's point of view. Where it's
right.
Like, please come in and spend money on comics, not like out of an elitist nerdy point.
Right.
Of view.
Just like you should
that shirt if you don't read Batman.
Yeah. So, and that's why I'm saying it's like there's no difference in that. He didn't point that out. I think that points out the sexism that was involved.
I mean, yeah, because he's singling out female cosplayers here.
Right.
He's using cosplayer as a euphemism for female. And you know, at the same time, I mean, not to devil's advocate here for a second. Now, I don't really believe that there are people at conventions who invest that level of time and effort in making a costume just to get attention from guys that from all the stuff he said. You know,
right?
I'm like,
that doesn't make any sense.
Somebody else distilled it down very nicely, which is few people. This is another podcast. People, few people get as much enjoyment from their hobby as cosplayers do.
Yeah.
They're just, that's just unabashedly, it is the psych. Well, you know, okay, here's the thing, right? Cosplay, for all walks of cosplay, it kind of fascinates me. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about favorite characters or whatever, but, you know, Harris is not wrong at the same time when he says that there are these incredibly hot women out there at conventions, junk all hoisted up, outfits barely there, and that fascinates me, and not in the obvious way. I mean, I think books could honestly be written about the psychology of cosplay. Are you really shaking your goods purely because you like the Black Cat or whatever? You know, is that?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think. My brain, like, where I would like to go and to like to think is that, again, I think we attach to, like, that superhero paradigm because it's empowering. You know, there's so many things about human life.
Empowering, that was another thing. Is it the superhero thing, though? Is it the slightly overt sexuality of it that you find empowering because it's something you can do here, can't do in public? I mean,
I mean, like I said,
I would legitimately like to know. I mean, I, at the same time, I'm very sure that there are women who just do this to try and foster a modeling career. Like, I mean, I know there's a lot of well-known cosplayers out there who have gone on to be professional models and use it as a kind of springboard or increase their profile by doing it that way, you know. And I'm not saying they're any less fans because
exactly.
They're going to get their hands dirty. But
Curry. Like, Adrienne Curry is a good example. She loves to cosplay. She cosplays all the time. She's also a model, you know. So does that mean that she's not a fan because she is a model? You know, it's like, no.
But then the psychology of it, it's like, I don't remember the name of that one really well-known sexy cosplayer. Like, there's just one. But she was the one that dressed up as a sexy Pikachu. And that image just did the rounds on the internet. I don't know the girl's name. Don't know. But it's like, you didn't just decide.
I know who you're talking about.
Okay, well, maybe you can tell me your name.
Google can tell us.
Google. It's just, you know, she didn't just decide to dress up as Pikachu. She decided to barely dress as like a pair of breasts with a Pikachu hat, and I'm like, I'm not judging or criticizing. I'm just like, what's the psychology behind it? I literally think books could be written about this shit. Books I would read, nice glossy pages with lots of photos.
We should write it and make money off it. But I think as far as like the superhero,
there you go, McFeely.
I think as far as the superhero cosplay goes, I would like to think it's a connection to the power dynamic. Mm. I mean, in the sense that, you know, I think it's true for a lot of women that, you know, so much they're judged on their looks and everything else, and it's like dressing up, I think, in that way could be empowering in the sense, and Nicole hopefully could, I would hope that she would chime in here for a second and save us, at least say that we're right or not. But anyway, you know, but I think on some level, you know, that connection to that power is like a way of saying, this is who I am in the sense of, you know, I am becoming this character, and I can dress this way because I'm empowering myself. Now, some of it is they're dressing that way because that's how some of the characters are drawn.
Yeah.
You know, and if you like the character, that's how the character is drawn. So there you go. So I don't know.
Do some people pick out a character specifically because it will allow them to dress that way, be it as an empowerment thing, be it as feeling a bit saucy that weekend, whatever, I don't know, you know. These are the big questions that we probably can't answer here.
No. But they're interesting questions, and I think they're questions. Okay. Go ahead, Nicole, I'm sorry.
What I think it comes down to is, you know, one of my favorite things growing up was playing dress up, you know, being something that I couldn't be, even though if it was maybe as simple as a princess or even something as crazy as a dragon, I liked playing that way. And I guess some people like myself just don't want to get out of that. You want to be something that you're not. You want to get out and be something different. Or you relate to a character. You find a character that you read about that's so similar to you, and you want to become that second image of yourself through that character, so you build a cosplay around it. So, yeah, there, like you said, there's a lot of psychology around it.
I mean, when you stop and think, like, I mean, I imagine there's a lot of it, and I'm not going to judge Trent. I think maybe a little more on the male side of just getting to play doofy dress-up, you know? But make no mistake as well, there are big, beefy guys who are just interested in wearing costumes that show off how much they hit the gym. You know, believe me, when I talk about showing off your goods, I'm not just talking about women here.
Right. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
By the same token, that there are plenty of women who just, like you say, dress up like a princess or whatever. There is something very primal about it at the same time. Very, you know.
But I would do cosplay. I mean, like, I would do cosplay, but I've seen Metal Hawk Guy. And... I don't want to subject the world to that, and I can't think of a good superhero that I would want to dress up as that I would not do it complete injustice, so I don't, but, you know, but I can totally see the desire.
I would like to think about maybe trying it at some point, but I don't think I have
the... Look at Dial H. Look at Dial H. You could do something.
I could totally be the Dial H guy.
Dial H is
off.
Like a convention's worth of comic. Of
yeah, really. There's no. I am the Dial H guy right now.
You just go as Nelson. Just wear the dial around your neck.
That's
what
it.
Was the chimney guy that he turns into? You
the
can,
boy
you
chimney.
That
guy.
No,
yeah.
I still want to see someone dressed up as Iron Snail.
Oh my God! I don't even know how you would do that.
I still want to see someone dressed up as Iron Snail.
I just like a pencil flash. The ultimate example of that sort of dressing up but not caring sort of cosplay. It's like somebody just in jeans and t-shirt with like a cardboard circle around their neck, and when someone asks them who they are, says, "I'm Dial H for Hero." You know, not even who the character is.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm that guy. Yeah.
I'm House of Secrets. I'm Journey into Mystery.
Yeah. God. So, anyway, it's an interesting discussion. Someone smarter than us maybe should write a book, and then we can read it. There's a book in it,
I swear to God.
There really is. I think you're absolutely right. I'm sure that someone has written
it. I'm not sure everybody has. I don't believe everybody has deep reasons. As you say, some people maybe just want to have fun. And hooray for fun. Love fun.
Big fun is good.
But then you do look at some of these guys, and purely because it's the internet and certain images of attractive women get circulated more than other kinds of images, you do get an overwhelming sense that there's an awful lot greater proportion of these kinds of cosplayers out there when there really aren't.
No.
But, you know, there's a whole different psychology and many different ones, like just within that subset of types of cosplayer for why people dress up like that. And there's a book there. But maybe we should talk about some other kinds of books.
Yeah, we probably ought to talk about comic books anyway. Yeah. Because we're going to have a big discussion at the end of the show, obviously. So we should, I guess, move on. But this is a fascinating discussion. It's one that will keep going on way beyond us. So. Yeah. With smarter people than us.
Look to us for all the answers.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a discussion that will go on with smarter people than us. So we're lowly podcast people. But anyway, all right.
I would say that there's a G4 TV special in the future for this, but not since they're moving away from that.
Since there's no G4, yeah, then
no. Since there's G4, then forget
like,
that.
Boobs! That would be the show for 30 minutes.
Yeah. So... Yep, so next week, Nicole, we're going to have to ask that you actually pan your camera down a little bit and you wear something a little more revealing.
Need some proof, evidence.
Apparently, Timmy didn't know you had breasts, so...
That's as much as you get.
That's as much as we get on the show. Yeah, because we obviously brought you on because we wanted to see your breasts and not because
exactly.
You, like, have great opinions on comics and things, so...
Wait. Yep, they're there. Just had to make sure they're still there.
Okay, we're glad that you're. getting to check.
I'm a comic book geek. I'm not supposed to have these.
Right. Yeah,
watch out, they might dry up and fall off.
Yeah. God. All right. Before I get in trouble, I'm gonna move on. All right, Chris Triplett.
So, no, comic books. Is it time to review?
Let's review comic books then. What do you have then, Chris Triplett? Chris McFeely is feeling a little warm over there. So I'm going to go take a quick cold shower, and I'll be back.
Be right back.
Googling girl Pikachu pictures. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris Triplett.
Yeah, so comics came out. I didn't read much this week, but the books that I did read were pretty awesome. Like Indestructible Hulk. Anybody read Indestructible Hulk?
Why does he have armor? Hulk doesn't need armor.
Hulk has armor. He doesn't have armor this issue. Maybe he does in the next issue.
Not in the next issue. I know that was a question someone asked Mark Waid or something. It's like, the Hulk does not need armor. And it's like, well, it's not for him. It's for Banner.
Graceful behavior. You're spitting on 30 years of Hulk legacy. Guys.
You destroyed the Hulk as we know it.
Seriously. Okay. And what's up with all these girls who call themselves nerds these days? I seriously don't think, guys.
Well, Hulk doesn't wear this issue. He might be wearing it in the next issue with the direction going with the book, because it's a kind of a different direction, which is it's all Mark Waid. You know, Mark Waid likes to do that. What's cool about the issue is it starts off with Maria Hill, and she's basically looking for the Hulk. You know, she's tracking him, trying to find him. She's got like a laptop or iPad open, and she's watching video footage of the Hulk destroying something. And the cool thing about it,
Maria Hill. I'm a girl. I don't know who that is.
Maria Hill. But Maria Hill would be a great cosplay costume. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you'd have to sexy it up. You know, you gotta reveal more boobs.
You're like
probably
a tight
have to wear. You probably have to wear up. My name is Maria Hill name tag for anybody to figure out who you were.
You'd have to have like a shield badge that says, you know, my name's
Maria
Hill.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Maria.
God.
Shield.
It's the same way as dressing up Agent Coulson. You know, you're going to have to wear.
You would be funny, though. Is she. What would be funny, though, is if you had the name badge that said Visitor on it instead. Visitor Maria Hill.
Visitor Maria.
There you go.
But speaking of Agent Coulson, I was about to get to it. I don't know if prior to this, but like in this issue, Phil Coulson sort of makes an appearance.
He's hanging around with Black Nick Fury over in Secret Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was in there. Okay, I haven't been reading it, but in the issue, Maria Hill is basically texting Phil Coulson, and when I saw it, I was like, Coulson! Awesome! Yay!
You exist in this world.
You exist in
this
world.
He was in Battle Scars with Nick Fury Jr., and he's going to be in Secret Avengers.
You know, I made the argument...
Now point one, which we all reviewed.
Not to digress, but Well, for just a second, but you know, I made the argument too that for people talking about like pop culture, that in 10 to 15 years, white Nick Fury will be a thing of like the past. Like that will
shut
be,
your mouth.
That will be gone, you know, yeah. Because this Nick Fury will take over. It will be the version of Nick Fury that everyone knows because
Stop
the
it.
Films will have been.
Stop
so
it.
Prolific that even in the comic they won't have the white Nick Fury.
Dear God, I'll come over there.
I'm sorry, dude, but you know it's gonna happen.
I know, but it doesn't mean it's not the friggin' it's not one of the single most contrived Marvel things Marvel have done.
It is, but it's but in 10 or 15 years nobody will know the difference. You know what I mean?
And then like 10 or 15 years later they'll get back to it because it'll be written
yeah,
through.
It'll happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but, go ahead and tell us.
But yeah. For now, Nick Fury is still some old white dude with an eye patch, so I'm fine with
that. Where? In what
yeah.
book?
Yeah, that's true. I
Which book
that
is
anyway.
That in?
Somewhere. I'm assuming he's somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they didn't kill nice. Him to make way for his son, so that was something.
That's Yeah, that's nice. He's just sort of retired. You can imagine him on a beach somewhere.
Yeah.
Wherever they used to do those beach issues of Avengers.
Yeah, and there's like Hydra agents in the tall grass. Just
yeah.
Creepy.
Beach issues. Are you talking about like the swimsuit Marvel
yeah.
comics that you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
That was a thing.
That was a thing. Yeah. But going on, Indestructible Hulk. Like I said, Maria Hill's looking for the Hulk. Can't find him. She's just kind of sitting in a diner, you know, waiting for something. And then Bruce Banner just shows up and sits down at the table with her. Found him. You know, she's done. She doesn't have to look for him. And she thinks he's going to cause some trouble. He sets this machine down in front of her, and her first response is, "What is that?" And she says, "Is it a gamma bomb?" Because, of course, you're going to assume that Bruce Banner has a gamma bomb, you know, when he sets it down. But what the cool thing is about this comic is that it's basically this different direction with the Hulk. It's where basically, you know, we've always gotten the story where Banner's like, you know, "I'm tired of being the Hulk. I need to cure myself of this. I need to find a way to get rid of the Hulk." Well, one day he basically does the same thing again like normal, does an experiment and tries to cure himself. It goes south. Things, you know, don't get better. And he basically, you know, he says it in the issue that, you know, "I had an epiphany. I'm incurable. I can never be cured of the Hulk. He's a part of me." He even makes a reference saying that it's sort of like something that he has to, you know, deal with. You know, like how people have chronic conditions like diabetes or cancer or, you know, something. It's his chronic condition. He can never get rid of it. So he decides that, you know, if that's the case, he's going to do something with his time. You know, like, you know, half the time he's going to be this raging monster that's going to destroy things. But, you know, the other half of the time, he's Banner. He's one of the most brilliant guys in the Marvel Universe. You've got your Tony Starks. You've got your Reed Richards. You've got, you know, Peter Parker. Bruce Banner, you know, doesn't really, you know, get recognized for more than, hey, he turns into a big green guy and he breaks things, you know? So in this issue, he makes this device that he says, this is a purification unit that, if put into mass production, can eliminate all waterborne disease in the next 5 years, saving millions of lives. In which, you know, Marie Hill's like, you know, "Wow, you know, that's incredible. You know, what's the name for it?" He says, "I call it Tuesday." Because he made it on the
Nice.
So he basically tells her that, you know, this is it. You know, "I'm coming to you first. I'm coming to the U.S. first. I could have gone to Latveria. I could have gone to, you know, Wakanda. Or I could have gone to, like, somewhere else, you know, to offer these services." He says, "I want to do this. You know, if S.H.I.E.L.D. can put me up with, like, a big expensive lab and, you know, set of our equipment," he says, "you know, I think I can do amazing things, you know, incredible things that could make the world a better place and kind of make up for, you know, the destruction that the Hulk's done." The flip side is, when he's not Banner, the Hulk basically becomes like this thing that you can point. You can just point into a direction, let loose. So you're reading this, and I'm thinking, Hulk, Agent S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's basically what it looks like the direction's going, because, like, you know, they're going over the deal, and he's Banner figured out the reason that Maria is there in this little diner is because she's basically she's waiting to go after the Mad Thinker. He's, like, in the nearby town and everything. Banner figured it out, and he basically says, you know, do we have a deal? Do we have a deal? You know, and she's like, I'm director of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I don't know if I can make that call or not. And he says, well, if you don't take the deal, you know, I'm walking or something. And she never does answer, but her answer is when Banner has his back turned, she hits him with a plank so he'll get mad and turn into the Hulk and go after the Mad Thinker. So, I mean, that's basically it in a nutshell. He goes and he takes down the Mad Thinker, and this is the new direction of the Hulk. He's not just, you know, this monster. He's sort of like this monster working for S.H.I.E.L.D., but on his off days, he's now Banner trying to actually make a difference. You know, he knows he's not going to be able to cure himself of this, but then maybe it's like a gun and you can point it in the right direction. So it's an interesting take. I mean, I don't know how often we've actually gotten this take. I'm sure that, you know, Peter David's crossed this bridge at some point in his longest Man of the Hulk. But, I mean, I can't think of a lot of cases where we've gotten this. And I just love saying Hulk, Age of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And that's there's
the book, you know, Age of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, there's that cartoon coming up, isn't there? Hulk Agents of Smash. So we'll see how that goes and see if they create a book about that. Yeah. No, that's actually, you know, think about it, that's quite similar in a broad sense as to what he did with Daredevil that was so successful, which is he has the character sort of take a look back over their life and actively develop a new outlook on their long-standing misery to try and drive them forward in a new way.
And it's cool, too. One thing I like about it is, like, throughout the issue, there's this, you know, reoccurring things happen, like, different clocks that are just kind of ticking. Like, you know, Maria Hill's got this clock she on her, like, her watch on her arm. She keeps looking at it, and you'll see the little caption. It goes tick, tick, tick. And he knows she's waiting for something. But, like, you know, even at the end of the issue, like, specifically, she was waiting on the Mad Thinker. At the end of the issue, it ends, like, the last panel is on her watch, as she's, you know, kind of helping Banner up after he's, you know, just stopped the Mad Thinker, and it's going tick, 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 tick. So I'm like thinking, you know, it's kind of like, you know, so, you know, how long are they going to be able to kind of keep this going? You know, how long before she goes with you?
Yeah, I mean, because he is. He's sort of that ticking time bomb. So
you can say you're going to do all this with the Hulk, but frankly, the second the Hulk decides not to play along.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't just point the Hulk. But, you know, I heard Mark Waid. I mean, it's like it's the great thing. It's like with Daredevil, you got it distilled down into that way of Daredevil finding a new way to be a man without fear by ignoring the past and the future and living only in the present. And I heard Mark Waid describe the basic, like the high concept, like one sentence sales pitch for this series is Hulk smash, Banner build.
Yeah,
and that, nice. You know, that intrigued me right away. I have to say, I might have to go get the first issue of this. I like the sound of this a lot.
Yeah, it's cool. I recommend it. And that Hulk armor that you were mentioning, there is, like, designs for it in the last page of the issue. So I guess that's coming. I mean, I guess if you are, like, a Hulk agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., you're probably going to need a suit. You know, like a S.H.I.E.L.D. suit or something.
We had said on Twitter, the armor's for Banner.
Yeah. All right,
Hulk, because the Hulk is wearing
it. It's got to be made big enough to fit the Hulk, but obviously it's going to shrink whenever he turns.
Yeah, I guess it's like it's got like pin particles wearing it, you know, so it can shrink. They're like in the
better. Unstable molecules.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's cool. I've been waiting for a reason to jump back onto the Hulk. I love the character. Been kind of for the last couple of years since Planet Hulk. I've been kind of not reading it. But, dude, Mark Waid and what's his name? The artist.
Who's doing the art on that one?
It's you.
Oh, is it Lionel Yu?
Yeah, Lionel Yu. Yeah. Totally, this is the time to jump on board. I can't say enough good things about some of the choices they're doing with the Marvel Now books. I mean, it's an exciting time to be a Marvel fan. It really is. So, yeah. That's the Hulk.
Awesome.
Check it out.
Okay. Nicole.
Okay, well, I'm going to be reviewing something I pretty much have no clue on, but there's going to be a lot of fans out there.
So you're not a real fan. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing reading comics. Yeah. I'm just a girl.
You were trying to read
pretty.
The comic below your boobs, and you missed. Like, half
trust
of
me,
it.
The problem that is here is not that you're a girl. It's that you are not from the United Kingdom. That's where the problem
arises. That's the problem here.
Okay. You can't properly appreciate. No, go ahead.
It's because the cover looked really pretty, and I thought, oh, I got to read this. Oh, yeah. Look how cute he is. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to review.
It was, like, totally lame. He, like, never took his helmet off or anything.
And it's like, oh, my God, he's got to have the worst helmet hair ever. I mean, what kind of shampoo God. Product does he use? Like, ew.
Gag me with a spoon.
Don't make me dig my gallon, girl, man.
So if you haven't figured it out, Nicole's reviewing.
I'm reviewing Judge Dredd number one.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I know what the character's about. Well, I've heard of what the character's about. I've saw the old movie. I haven't seen the new movie, but this is a chance for me to get to know.
Go see the new movie. New movie. Good.
I want to. This is before. This is back in the day when I had two jobs and I didn't have time to go to the movies. But this is something that a character that I want to learn about. So what a great opportunity! A new number one is out about Judge Dredd. So, and I'm fairly sure that they got the character down. It starts off in Mega City 1, of course, and it tells you about it. Tells you what happened. It's just this huge city that's on the East Coast. I'm pretty sure that's correct, right?
Yeah.
And they have, yeah. Yeah. What's happening is they have this elitist mall that the high and mighty could go to and enjoy the fruits. I say quote unquote fruits because there's this magical tree that actually buds fruits, ripens them, and makes them fall off and recycles within a matter of 2 minutes. So you guys could go to this tree of life and pick from it, enjoy it. Well, let's just say that's the main part of the story is it goes awry, it explodes, it becomes a bomb itself. And of course it starts riot, people are looting, and that's when the judges come in. And they do explain what the judges are. And of course Judge Dredd is the highest and the most feared. Am I getting this right? This is how it's supposed to be.
Yes, it all sounds right to me.
Okay. The thing is, and with this fruit tree going haywire and exploding, it sends off all the sensors of the robots. So the robots are starting to think for themselves.
It's never good. Never good when the robots start thinking for themselves.
Yeah, robots are thinking for themselves now. It malfunctions all the judges' equipment, so their guns don't really work like they're supposed to. And so it pretty much in the end, it's the robots versus the judges. And it's you know, a fairly
it's
good
Judge
story.
Dredd versus the Terminator. I would buy that.
I'd buy that, yeah.
I'd buy that.
Yeah. There is a couple of gory parts, not extreme. There's a few heads taken off. Yeah. there's also two stories in this. I don't know if that's going to be a thing, if there's going to be two stories in each one. But that was the first story. And then they have the other story, which is a store owner that's taken place in the same time. And his robot has the mind of her own, and she basically sets him up to get arrested. so it's a good way to start off with a character that I know little of. The artwork is amazing in both stories because they had two different artists for each story, but both of them are amazing. It's beautiful. IDW. The first story that's called Ripe about the tree and everything. The artist was Nelson Daniel, and Protection Racket was Paul Glacey. And the writer for both of them was Dwayne Swarzynski. So again, it's beautifully done. The story has caught my attention. So like I said, I don't know a whole lot about the judge, but I enjoyed it, so I recommend it. There you go.
As insanely complex as Dredd's world can be, like it's a very like simple dystopian future where the police force are judge, jury, and executioner. One, boom, go forward. That's all you need.
Wow,
to just go from there.
Yeah, this is the IDW book, right? The one that they're putting out.
This is the IDW right there. That got cover D. They had six different covers. So, of course, cover one was sold out. That's the one that everyone wanted, with Judge Dredd with his gun up to him. So, yeah, it's really done. Beautiful artwork. Beautiful artwork. So, I recommend this. And I
haven't had a chance to read this either.
Actually.
Awesome. Cool. Okay.
It's good, because that was always a dodgy prospect, letting Americans handle Judge Dredd. So.
I'm sure it'll go just as well as
because the whole point of Dredd is that it is a kind of a British satire of extreme American police brutality and such like that. But...
No.
That's the Americans joke.
American extreme.
Americans accept that.
That country. How do you think we're extreme?
We don't do that. No.
Okay. Even if you don't want to read the story, just go pick it up and look at the artwork. It's pretty.
Awesome.
It's really pretty. I like the bloody parts.
Might have to check it out. Could happen. Okay.
You will love the film.
Okay, I want to cover a couple of things real quick for my time. I won't try to spend too much time. Anyway, first up, Deadpool. Deadpool is still good.
I haven't read this either. I'm really pissed off at the amount of stuff I haven't read.
Yeah, and you should. It's good.
I know.
The high points, no thought bubbles again. So we're beyond that, it seems. Like, that wasn't just a first issue fluke. I mean, there's maybe a little bit of first wall. There's a part in here where he's sort of hallucinating, and there's a lot of Marvel women that are sort of throwing themselves at him at a beach.
Yeah, that's hallucination.
But that was pretty funny. He teams up with Ben Franklin for this, the ghost of Ben Franklin, which is awesome. And Ben Franklin's
zombie Ben Franklin, right?
Huh?
Is it zombie Ben Franklin?
No, it's ghost Ben Franklin.
Is it robot
he didn't
Ben
come
Franklin?
Back as a zombie because he wasn't a person.
He used electricity to turn himself into a ghost. Yes. And he's kind of a womanizer, so he keeps, like, hitting on the girl. And no one else can see him but Deadpool. So he keeps, like, hitting on all the other women that he's around. It's great.
There was a Doctor Strange story once where Doctor Strange and Clea went back in time to, like, meet Ben Franklin. And Ben Franklin started macking on Doctor Strange's girlfriend.
Yeah, that's totally a thing that would happen. yeah, because Ben Franklin was known as a bit of a womanizer. Anyway, this issue is just great. I mean... The high points again. For half of this issue, he's fighting, why did it not stay in my head? Roosevelt.
I was gonna say there's no Deadpool villains I can think of. So.
No, this is all this. I mean, this zombie president, zombie president thing is going on. So he's fighting Teddy Roosevelt for most of this.
Now, that is worth the price of admission alone.
At a zoo.
My favorite president.
At a zoo, because Teddy's hunting animals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's a great bit with an elephant. I'll just say that. I won't ruin that part.
He's hunting animals. You know the greatest game is, right?
Yeah. But I'll say that... you know this book is on the right direction when S.H.I.E.L.D. and Deadpool go to get the help of Doctor Strange. They knock on the door... And the door gets opened a crack, and you can see like hippies and bunches of women hanging out, drinking, and probably doing drugs with Doctor Strange. So, yeah, you know that's going to be on a good track. So anyway, check out Deadpool. It is good now. I added it to my pull list this week. So.
Deadpool is awesome.
Yes.
Very good stuff.
Yeah, it's back to being good. There was one time when he. Like, got impaled on something, and he was like, I don't think my body's ever made the sound splort before. But that was, like, the closest to maybe a fourth wall moment, you know, in the whole thing. So, Minimum Carnage ended this week, and, man, it took a nice turn at the end. I wouldn't say it was, like, earth-shattering or groundbreaking or anything, other than... Maybe other than the ending, which I'll go ahead and just spoil here, which is it all ends up with basically there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in the microverse, but Carnage ends up coming back to the primary universe with a bunch of microverse versions of these sort of hybrid undead carnages. And so it's left Venom and Kane to sort of fight them and try to beat Carnage, which Venom actually does using a sonic bomb that was given to him by some of the Micronauts. And they end up knocking. There's a part where they end up, near the end, they end up making Cassidy unconscious. And yeah, Kane basically uses his spike to lobotomize Cassidy. That's his name.
He'll
right?
be fine.
Yeah, well, it's not that he's fine. He's alive. He's just lobotomized. But he still has a symbiote. So now the symbiote is basically in full control. But he's locked up, so that'll
be... He'll be fine.
So does that mean it's less crazy now?
No, no, no. That means it's apparently... Apparently his humanity was the only thing that was holding it back, even for as bad
as
he
humanity?
Was.
What in the
yes.
hell?
What? So that's where the story...
I don't know about this, you guys.
So anyway, it was an interesting moment, especially for, you know, like Kane. Like, that's totally Kane's approach. Because at the end of it, you know, Venom's like, well, you know, what makes us different than them now? You know, what makes us, you know, better? And Kane's like, basically, like, well, you figure that out, and then you let me know.
Like, you know what really? They should do now? They could have, like Barry or someone steal the Carnage symbiote, and then there's, like, this agent that's, like evil. You know, like, because Venom's like...
Version?
Yeah, like an evil agent, yeah.
Anti-Carnage.
Like Anti-Carnage?
Like an anti-Venom agent. Like, you know, he's like a yeah. sort of Black Ops agent, and you... The enemy gets an agent now, and he's Carnage.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be interesting. It was a good event. Awesome. It wasn't great. I mean, again, not earth-shattering. Not, I don't think it was world-shaking or anything. I think it was had some good moments for the characters. I thought it was a good balance. You know, the writers sort of coming together to write an interesting story. But I don't. I mean, it's nothing that's going to move the earth or anything like that. So it was just kind of a fun event.
So it's kind of a minimum event. So it was minimum.
Yeah, it was a minimum event, I guess, in that way. Okay. I see what you did. Okay, final thing I want to spend a little bit of time on is going to be Death of the Family, second issue. This came out not this week, but last. This is really interesting. I think Steiner's really getting into the sort of the essence of you know, this confrontation, this, you know, locked horns that it is between Batman and the Joker. We know that the Joker has now kidnapped Alfred. And, you know, Batman, he knows now that the Joker's going after everyone, and he even goes after Gordon before he can really get to Gordon. And, there's a lot of poetry that the Joker is going for in this. I mean, the Joker is written very smart in the sense that, you know, the way Batman equates it is he's doing his old crimes, but he's doing them sort of upside down. You know, he's putting all these odd twists on them. And, you know, Bruce goes to, the only person that he tells that Alfred has been kidnapped is Dick. And, he's like, I'm not going to tell anybody else. And I'm like, why aren't you going to tell anybody? You know, why not tell everyone? And he's like, well, I want them to be focused. He's like, I'm having a hell of a time focusing myself. Yeah. You know,
I love that scene there too.
It's great.
They're talking like code. They're talking, like, you know, the Wayne's butler got kidnapped, and like, you know, Dick Grayson just gets fed up with him. You just call him Alfred, for God's sakes. Come on, Bruce.
Yeah.
Listen, for God's sakes. Shit just got real. Come on, we got to deal with this.
Yeah. Basically, and Batman's says. Like totally trying not to deal with it. You know, it's like the only way he can keep his focus, keep his senses, is to, you know, not deal with it. And he knows that the next crime is going to be, you know, is going to be involving the reservoir and the water, because that was the one of which, and Batman, he uses the term that it's the one where he finally saw the Joker for who he was, and the Joker saw him, you know, for who he is. So again, this symmetry in an odd way between the characters.
There's some great art in this.
There is. Oh my
God. That page on the bridge. You know, when he first encounters the Joker, and the Joker's like, hello, darling.
Yeah.
You know, it's one big page, you know, full page of them, you know, one on one side, one on the other. It's great.
Yeah, there's I mean, this whole scene, like, really a good portion of this, you know, the half of this issue is just this scene between him and the Joker on the bridge, and the Joker's, you know, really wanting to, you know, he's talking about, like, boiling it down and just talking, you know, like, because they don't. And I don't know, dare I recite any of this? Is this... I scared people, apparently, last time, so I don't know. But no, I mean, even the great part where it's like you can see the face sort of half falling off as well.
Yeah. It's like we were saying in the pre-show, though. It's like, what's up with the face thing? It feels like an aborted plot.
It is. It's something that they got stuck with, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's like Tony Daniels came up with that for Detective.
It's not paying off is the problem. I mean, I know we're only in issue two, but it's... Maybe it's going to pay off, but, you know, it's still good, and it's still really good.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, if you just did that to make the Joker look more horrific, whatever, really, you know, you don't need to disfigure the Joker to make him more horrific. The horrificness of the Joker is not in the visual of the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, but
maybe there's something that's going to happen yet. Maybe we'll see.
But, yeah.
I kind of hope that maybe, you know, is there any possibility that, you know, it's not the Joker? That's why he's got this face on him. Like, is there any possibility? But I don't think that there's any.
No, I don't think so. It doesn't feel
that way.
He did
voice analyses at some point, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah, he double checked all of it to make sure.
Hey, speaking of voices and recordings, I loved that bit with the tape machine.
Where
just like when the lightning cracks in one panel, like just like everything's cast and it's like the surface of the tape player, which or the hi-fi, just suddenly looks like a smiling face. Like,
yes. Yes, it's yeah, exactly. Oh God. yeah. But this is all really good stuff. I mean, this is just the Joker here is just absolutely creepy and awful. I mean, he talks about like, you know, figuring out who would have died from, let's see, where's the, he talks about, like, going through, like, the whole sequence and, like, figuring it out ahead of time.
He really just legitimately wants to talk to Batman, so he figures out how the fight is gonna go, skips ahead to the end, kills all the people that would have wound up dying in the course of the fight, just to get it out of the way, so he and Batman can talk.
Yeah.
That's great. He's just, D, now we can chat, Mike Keenan and I.
Yeah.
Now, some really interesting analyses I read of this issue is on Bleeding Cool, though. It's like, okay, so the Joker calls Batman darling a lot. All right, and that's right out of Dark Knight Returns. Nothing special about that. But it's just one piece of quite a lot of Peter Pan imagery and wordplay that's included in the story. Because he talks about tapping at windows and looking for shadows that have come away. And, of course, darling was the family surname of Peter Pan. I don't know what's going on there, but there's a lot of that in the story. And I'm like, what is the metaphor here? I don't know. What is it? Is it like, is Batman the Peter Pan, the boy who never got past something that happened in his childhood, or is the Joker the Peter Pan who's come to take him away, or is the Joker the Peter Pan metaphor who's come to take this man child away into a world of horrible fantasy?
But certainly the big reveal at the end of this is the last little bit where let's see, he talks about how. Let's see. Oh, I guess we'll just go. You're fakers, imposters, phonies. Like Gordon, your friend Gordon. He seems strong, but deep down, no. He's a bleeder, you see. He bleeds for everyone. The city, his men, his daughter. A tender bleeder. Oh. Phony. Now I was just toying with him, but you all... I'm coming for you one by one. Because you're the real bad ones. The true villains. The ones who've ruined my dear king. I mean, look at him. He can't even cage a few old owls without your help anymore.
I love that line so much.
Oh, I know. He knows it, too. He knows what you're doing to him, which is why he's keeping a secret from you. Something just between me and him. The secret that let me learn it all. Learn and write it down in his book. A book made from the skin of a bat. From
I dropped
dear
a
little
fucking
cave.
Brick at that point.
Yes.
The book from Grant Morrison's Batman. The Joker got that book. That's how the Joker knows everything.
Yep. That dear little cave you all have, you all hide in. You're lying. Oh, am I? Well, I guess we'll see, won't we? But I'll tell you this, little bats and birds. Within 72 hours, you'll all be dead. And here's the punchline. Batman here will be the one who kills you.
Yay!
So anyway.
That's the crossover books.
There's your crossover books, kids. Wow. But that's bad news there, I would say.
Just getting started.
Yeah. So, and I love this end bit, too, between Penguin and Joker. That was nice as well, but shit's getting real, y'all. Yeah, so, I mean, it's definite that he does know who they all are and everything, and so... And nice tie-in to keep it in. I mean, this...
Man,
this,
that's...
Yeah. Well, and this feels like part of the universe as well now, too, where we're talking about the Batman Inc. and everything. It's like, oh, we're keeping that, yay. You know, I mean, it's not that we weren't. Obviously, we knew it was, but it's just like paying reference to that to pay off.
I'm not particularly worried about those guys.
No.
That comic's being written by someone else.
So, it's very good. And apparently, Snyder already knows, was talking about the next arc, so I'm very excited about that as well. So, anyway, there you go. Check it out. You should be reading Death of the Family. It's good stuff. So,
you should be reading Batman, period.
You really should be. I mean, it's only like the most popular title.
I mean, it kind of. I hear it's not doing that good, and it kind of needs to be putting it.
Yeah, right. But... Maybe if they only added a few more Batman books.
No. Don't do
what
that.
What we need is a talent ongoing.
Yes, because, you know. Yes, dear God. So, anyway, sorry. Anyway, there you go. So that's mine. Chris McFeely, then?
Yes, all right. Start the clock. Big one.
All right. How much time do you want?
Over the last couple of weeks, last 2 weeks, just to hit ones that couldn't possibly not be hit. I'm going to start with the first issue of Jason Aaron's Thor, God of Thunder.
Cool.
This is
like
new Marvel Now number one Thor. The central trick of at least this opening story arc, probably not going forward in the book, is that it is told simultaneously across three time periods. It's young, reaving, and wenching Thor from the days when he was worshipped as a god, modern day Thor, and then Thor from the future where he is the last god of Asgard and king
of
the day.
And he looks like Odin.
He's only got one eye, you know. And the central thing that ties these three time periods together is this god butcher, this creature. In the past, like just after he saved a Viking village, we see him find the butchered god of what appears to be a Native American god. And then in the present day, what a great concept this is, he hears, this is playing with Thor as a god in the way that nothing basically ever does. And it's where he, as a god, actually hears the prayers of a child on an alien planet that is dying. You know, it's a sun-baked world with no rain. And he actually hears the prayers of this child and comes and brings rain to the planet and saves it. And while he's there, he finds out that this child just did this out of utter desperation because this is a planet with no gods. They have no myths. They have no stories. There are no gods to these people. And Thor is like, Thor has never experienced such a thing, like a race that has no creation myth, that has no stories about, like, that doesn't have that. He's never experienced this before. So he goes looking to find what he knows they must have had gods, and he finds them butchered. And he is reminded of, I have not seen anything like this since. You know, and then that's where the threads start to come together. And then the issue closes out with our look at Thor, King of Asgard, where all the other Asgardian gods have been killed by this butcher some point far off in the future, and its hordes still come clawing to the walls of Asgard to take Thor and finish the job started all those many aeons ago. This is some good stuff.
Nice.
I think Jason Aaron was like a perfect fit for this book. Yeah. Oh my god, I'm so excited for this run.
I mean, I've not read an awful lot of Jason Aaron stuff, and I know him.
Wolverine,
I know he did
excellent.
I've read of Wolverine and the X-Men, I've really enjoyed, and everything I hear about it, but it's like it is totally tonally different to what's going on in this. And again,
I was expecting a jovial kind of joke book with Thor, and I did not get that at all. I was like, wow.
But I mean, you could see how he could write a good, like. Especially when we've got this, you know, this real young, hot-headed, before he's learned humility, like this reaving and wenching Thor. Come, horseman, why stand we here with the dead when you've a long house filled with cold mead and warm women? For Thor has not yet had his fill of either! You know, that sort of stuff. No, but
awesome.
Very, very good first issue. One of the best of Marvel now so far, honestly. The base concept, like, of really... really treating Thor as a god, like with followers and worshippers, and not just like this alien being who comes down and obeys and it just does stuff for people, but like something a little bit more than that, who can actually hear prayers and understands
That's
the true
cool.
spiritual
like
significance
that.
Of what being a god is. Very, very good stuff, I have to say. Sticking with the Thor family, out this week is the first issue, or rather I should say issue 646 of Journey into Mystery, which is the first issue by Catherine Immonen and Valerio Schiri, focusing on Sif after things have turned away from being about Loki.
I picked it up, I haven't read it yet, though.
Well, minimal spoilers then. I just have to say I'm very happy to see it's continuing a very high standard. The plot picks up with Sif at the midst of everything burns. She saves a child from the library of Asgard as it's burning. And it's one of Volstagg's kids, and so she's invited round for dinner, because like obviously that's what you do when you save a child's life. But she sees some of Volstagg's children reading comic books from that the people of Broxton have brought them, and she's brought the book that the child wanted from the library, which is full of all these great, wonderful, fantastic mythological stories as well, but the kids don't want to hear about it because they've got all these fantastic comic books. And they think like their own legends are just dumb and passé now, and it's like, what has that ever gotten us? Asgard just keeps getting destroyed and rebuilt again, and the humans come and bring all this wonderful new stuff, and all our stories never help us do anything. And this really affects if she is tired of the cycle of destruction and rebirth. So following the stories in the book, you see, we've still got story and Journey into Mystery, which is about the power of stories, even though it's a far more direct metaphor than that. She seeks out the sorceress from this story who empowered a group of warriors to be like the most powerful berserkers ever known to man. And she finds her and she wants to be taught how to be stronger and be better. But it comes at a price.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's maintaining a base theme similarity in that it is still dealing with the influence stories can have upon us, even though it is a little bit. Right, just really good stuff again. They've also maintained it doesn't have the wry tone of Gillen's Journey into Mystery, a little bit here and there, but they do still maintain the amusing recap page at the start, because it goes, who's the sword wielding woman who's a wonder on the battlefield and a lady in Asgardia and no one understands her but a thunder god? Sif, verily I can dig it. But then, I didn't even notice it at first, but when you run down through the credits, it goes, Catherine Immonen, writer, Valerio Schiti, artist, Jacob Thomas, talking about Sif, Lauren Sankovic. Shut your mouth!
Oh my god. Wow.
I'll keep pushing ahead with the female creators here to talk about Avengers Assemble number 9. Now, you'd be forgiven for forgetting this comic exists, because this is the one...
Oh, I read it. Yeah, got it.
this was the one that was formerly Bendis and Bagley doing the movie cast in an adventure with Thanos. Well, this series has now, after they've wrapped up their run, been taken over by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who we know from Captain Marvel, and Stefano Caselli, who we know from Secret Warriors and Avengers the Initiative, whose art I particularly like, so I figured even if the story was a bust, it was going to look pretty. Ho-ho! No bust here. No, sir. This is essentially... Tony Stark and Bruce Banner compete at science.
Yeah.
It's very movie-ish in tone. They've abandoned the notion of just using the movie cast because we've got Spider-Woman and Captain Marvel and who else is in here? And Wolverine and Spider-Man running around in the background as well. But it starts out with Tony and Bruce giving these speeches where Tony's talking about, oh, the future's a great thing, technology. And Bruce is like, oh, the future's going to be terrible if we don't watch it with technology. Rah, rah, rah. And it essentially leads to them deciding. This is like something out of a 1980s cartoon. Right? They're having a little discussion about their different viewpoints. Like, and in the midst of it all, they hear a news report about how a group of researchers at an Antarctic base haven't been heard from in a little while. And it's not too unusual, but it kind of raises their haggles. And they essentially decide that they will have a race. And the first one to get down to Antarctica and solve the mystery must respect the other one's beliefs.
And walk naked from the Baxter Building to the Interstellar.
Yes. You know, it's like a lot of the. I mean, again, yes, there you can feel the Bendis influence here when it is most characters just sitting around in the kitchen over breakfast. You know, Captain Marvel making a sandwich in full costume. You know, when Tony and Bruce are just discussing, like, you know, there are things about my presentation style I could improve. Well, that's all I meant. But I'm substantive. Oh, what, as opposed to me? You don't think I'm substantive? I think I'm substantive. No, you are, but you're also rich, handsome, famous, fun. Razzle-dazzly. Razzle-dazzly? You do razzle-dazzle? With all due respect to your ranks, Captains America and Marvel, we were having a private conversation. No, you weren't. We really weren't. Just a lot of...
I like how Spider-Woman says she'll join the Hulk because she can control him.
Yeah. You're not control Hulk. Oh, yeah? Hulk. Make me a sandwich. Cut to the Hulk smashing around in a kitchen. Ah, peanut butter have to be mixed!
Oh my god.
To get Hulk to make her a sandwich. Yeah. So yeah, it's like two-man teams, Hulk and Spider-Woman, and Iron Man recruits Thor to go down with him. Thor, buddy, I was just coming to look for you. You know you were my first choice. After Carol and Steve, who were right there, yes, and Wanda and Asha and Logan. Seriously, is this going to be a thing? Because I, no, my friend, I jest. My ego is grand, but not so grand as to be too easily slighted. Really, what is that like? As glorious, complete, and hard won as shall be our victory. We will leave them without so much as a goat for the milking. All right, that's what I'm talking about. Go.
So good.
You know, it's like they're trekking through the Arctic Waste, and we keep cutting back to like Wolverine and Captain Marvel and Spider-Man refereeing back in Avengers Tower, where they're microwaving popcorn, and Wolverine's going, "Ah, oh, you burned it." Did you use the popcorn button? You used the popcorn button. You never use the popcorn button.
Oh, wow.
And then some monsters attack. To be continued. No, very, very fun issue. Not at all what I was expecting out of it. Single-handedly has managed to validate the existence of that book in a Justice League internationally kind of buddy, fun, goofy, but like with legitimate drama and action and peril and everything in there as well.
I was going to drop it. Yeah. I was like, I'm done.
Oh, no, not
and I was like, maybe I need to keep this.
To keep it up on there. It has impressed me far more than anything DeConnick's done on Captain Marvel so far. Although I have to say, the last part of the first Captain Marvel arc was pretty decent, and the first part of the next one as well, where she teams up with Monica Rambeau, who was the former Captain Marvel, and they have a fight about their names.
Yeah, that was great.
And then I guess I should probably wrap up with another one from last week, which obviously I couldn't possibly let pass without talking about, which is the first issue of Matt Fraction's Fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We all know Matt Fraction did not have an enviable task taking over the Fantastic Four from Jonathan Hickman. But I have to say, he has done a good job kicking off. You know, he is... he does that thing that a lot, in fact, most creators do whenever they take over the Fantastic Four, which is they do just tend to go back to baseline Fantastic Four personalities and any kind of lessons they may have learned or development they may have gone through in the course of the previous writer's arc is just kind of ignored, because the Fantastic Four just have these baseline things that are never really going to change. So I'm well past being bothered about that at this point. You know, there was I remember a couple of years back, a lot of people kind of got up in arms when Mark Waid did this with the characters, and I was like, well, what else is new?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get this stuff like, oh, they go. Sorry?
That was a great run, still.
I mean, it was, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we got the Fantastic Four back fighting dinosaurs and whatever, and I mean, the first issue, it's basically a showcase of little bits starring each of the different members of the Four doing what they do. You know, Reed gets bitten by a dinosaur, and his skin actually breaks. So that's weird, you know.
Yeah.
And he essentially finds that their cosmically irradiated cells are starting to, or his at least, are starting to break down.
And it's going to happen to all of them eventually, right? That's
presumably. I mean, I guess that's the implication, yeah. Presumably. Yeah. Not presumably, rather, but under cover of taking his family on an exploration of time and space so that they can... Essentially, this is kind of following on from the lessons that were really learned about the importance and the significance of family in the course of Hickman's run. Franklin's had a couple of nightmares recently. Franklin having nightmares is never a good thing. They always come true. Death will consume the Fantastic Four. It always happens. But he's having nightmares. Reed can see that they were away back in time at the time. Reed feels bad about it. So under the notion of not wanting to be away from their children again, he decides to take the family, Franklin and Val included, like on a trip through time and space using the Negative Zone ship Johnny got in the course of Hickman's run as well. So they're not throwing everything out. Like, all this stuff is still here. Johnny's still got the Negative Zone ship. The Future Foundation kids are still here. But under cover of that notion, he's going to search the unknown universes for some kind of cure to their conditions. And in and amongst all of this, you get just like the little scenes of all the characters doing what they do. We meet the woman who will be Miss Thing over in FF. She and Johnny have been dating for a little while. I think my favorite scene in the book was when they are obviously on a date somewhere. Johnny has set up this floating little platform of technology in space, and they're just having a one-on-one intimate dinner there. And he says, "We've been dating for a while. I want to give you a little something special." He holds up a little jewelry box, and he opens it, and there's a little twinkle inside, and she looks down, and she says, "Oh," and she reaches in, and he pulls out a little bit, he pulls out a little piece of paper, and then, "That's my direct number."
It's
like, yes, okay,
that's my actual number
for this, yes.
Yeah.
That was the point at which I was like, yes, okay, that has successfully made me laugh. Oh, and look, they're in the Negative Zone, and the Nihilus is raising the planet.
Yeah.
That was like the denouement for me of that whole thing, where it's like they're eating dinner over a battlefield.
Yeah.
And Ben with the, "Hey, Susie, how do you delete things off of the internet?"
Yeah, it's like the Yancey Street Gang are moving with their times and decide to actually start filming their pranks on the thing and putting them up on YouTube. So he has to kind of learn internet. And then we get, I mean, Sue is the one character who really doesn't get much to do, because we do just have the Sue Richards action mum in action here. She's quite worried about the child. And this is like establishing that going forward now, this will be about the Fantastic Four off exploring these other worlds as Reed continues his secret agenda. This is although like it seems to be following out of the family theme Hickman set up, it does do that little retrograde thing where it's like, oh, Reed keeps something secret from his family, and it's like, ah, Reed, will you ever learn?
No.
Notionally, they're only going to be gone for 4 seconds because it's a time machine, so they can come back whenever. I think we all know something is going to go wrong. And it says continued in FF number one as they're going to actually recruit the they don't say who it is here, but we know it's Ant-Man, She-Hulk, Medusa, and Miss Thing to be the new FF to stand in for them while they're gone. And all the Future Foundation kids are here as well, and they all have their personalities in place, you know, all the little moloids and everything. Seize the dumplings! Yes.
In the bathroom got raced by
Bentley.
Bentley rules!
Yes. I was quite, I wasn't dumping it anyway because it's Fantastic Four and I always get Fantastic Four, but I was a little trepidatious going into this one, following Hickman, and I really think Fraction has hit all of the right notes. It's not an earth-shattering issue. It is a lot of setup, but I think that it shows he's learned the right lessons from what Hickman was doing and is incorporating what he did well going forward in a way that definitely makes me pleased, got a few good laughs out of me as an issue, and again, ranks it very highly as, I think, one of the best new Marvel Now number ones that have come out. But that is my Fantastic Four bias showing just a little bit.
Just a little bit, probably. Yeah. I would say. It was perfectly fine. I'm not going to pick it up. But, I mean, I grabbed the first issue just to check it out because I knew you would, and we would talk about it. And I was like, oh, that's fine. I think it's going to go in a cool direction. I'm not going to read it. But, you know. I can't read everything.
Before we leave it, that Mark Bagley art is pretty.
Oh, God, yeah, yes. How good. Did I not mention the Mark Bagley art? You know, there's a really great example of how good Bagley is. Like, Bagley is a guy, he's not a gorgeous artist. He doesn't draw beautiful pictures, and he doesn't draw like, really technically involved or things, or even art that's truly breathtaking. You know, he is just a reliable, well above competent, on time, strong, kinetic storyteller, you know?
I think well suited for Fantastic Four. I don't think he's ever done Fantastic Four.
Outside of guest appearances. I want to say he drew on Inhumans four-parter with Carl Kessel once, but I don't know. I think that the great example of his ability to tell a story here is in the utterly silent page where Reed has his machines examine his wounds, you know, and we get all the machines coming in down to his busted up arm, and we see a computer readout that is illustrating for us the fact that his cells are breaking down, and it's like, how do you draw that in such a way as to effectively communicate that information? And it's like, Bagley drew it, motherfucker. It's like, you don't need words on this page. Like, it's like Reed goes into a lovely long technical explanation along with Herbie. Yeah, Herbie's in this a little later in the issue. But it's like, yep, I figured all that out from the simplistic, not simplistic, but the like wonderfully straightforward, obvious storytelling ability of Mark Bagley's artwork. I will always be happy anytime Mark Bagley finds his way onto a project I'm already interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking forward to FF also, because I think
it's going to be cool. I don't think I have anything else to give a full review to, except to say that the final issue of Bendis' Avengers came out this week, and whoopee shit. No, it's like, hey, big shock. Wonder Man helped go down into the Microverse and save the Wasp. He fought the robot Horseman, who is nobody and means nothing and is a rubbish final.
Hey,
I'm here. Can I help out now? Yeah, we'll take you now.
Yeah, that'll do. And then it's like, it doesn't even... they try to do what they did with the... remember the finale issues of Avengers and New Avengers, where they would have these double-page spreads of art of past events drawn by all the different artists who'd worked on the book? Well, you get that again this issue, except they're single page spreads and it's just different angles of the fight, and then it's over, and it's like, it's nothing. It's like, it's good that you're leaving. I'm not like throwing confetti for the fact Bendis is leaving, but it's like, if this is the best thing he can offer up as his $5 double size 4 issue, it's like, maybe it's time to go.
Well, you know, like we were talking about before, it seems like Ultron was going to be it. And
yeah.
Didn't get out, you know?
I mean,
because Ultron would have been a good end. Yeah. Ultron would have been your swan song. It would have been like, yeah, you know, his run is done and it ended good, but it didn't happen.
At least New Avengers, the last issue of which is out next week, is dealing with a plot point from the start of that New Avengers run in Brother Voodoo. But then this has got Wonder Man in it, but it's like, no, I mean, it's just like a real marking time, as so much of Bendis' Heroic Age Avengers has been. It's just been about marking time between events and relaunches and changes. You know, he should have left after Siege.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also Iron Man 2 was out this week, and yeah. I think I enjoyed it more than Iron Man number 1.
Yeah, it was good.
It was fun. You know, not a lot of people's faces in it, so...
Yeah, that helped a lot. Lots of armor.
Just grins.
Lots of armor. That was good.
A nice illustration of how Tony is a complete douchebag who does not play by the rules at all whenever bad guys are the ones who are setting them. And a sort of nice little twist at the end that I completely misread at first and then was like, oh, wait, okay. Is it 1973? Okay.
Maybe. Did they make the comic? You don't know,
dude. And then I was like, well, to be fair, you've shown up my own sexism there because I did immediately make assumptions. Thank you, Caitlin Gillen, showing me the nasty part.
Yes.
And also, you know, it's a complete story in one issue, essentially, which is always nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. All right. Yeah. We're going
to
move
on. That's gonna, okay, that's everything of mine.
Okay.
So, hang on. Just before we move on to the final one, everybody in the chat seems to figure we're going to talk about More Than Meets the Eye number 11. And
we're not
going
to talk about More Than Meets the Eye 11. Look, okay. I'm not okay. Take this with a grain of salt, but seriously, guys, it was a good issue. It was really interesting.
Great.
Nice twist at the end. It is not earth-shattering. It does not change the world. It does not.
I didn't read it.
Any discussion about the issue is just about that last page. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
If you want to talk, we're about to talk about a comic that has a real game-changing twist on the last page that will prompt make you go back and read the comic again and experience in it a whole new different way. You could go back and read all of IDW stuff again, starring this character. Not to spoil it, since we're not going to talk about it. You could go back and read all the IDW stories starring this character, and they're not going to change, and they're not going to be reinformed by the big twist at the end of More Than Meets the Eye, because they weren't written with that in mind.
Right, it's not like this is the...
They take on new meaning, hidden
this
meaning.
This is not...
The way Spidey is.
This is not like the end of a long game or something. I mean, this
is... It feels like it is, because we first met this mysterious guy about a year ago. He hasn't appeared since. So people have really just been asking this question for the last 2 months or so. And this wasn't like a sudden swerve at the end. It's like, Spidey, you know something's going to happen, but what it is exactly gets thrown at you suddenly. You don't know what it is. I knew going into this comic, not having been spoiled, but I knew going into this comic that the last page of this issue would be telling me who the mysterious senator was. I didn't know who it was going to be, but I knew full well, because I understand how a story works, that's what the last page of the comic was always going to be. And it was great, certainly. I was gape-mouthed. I just figured it out before I turned the page, as is the obvious intention of the last couple of speech bubbles on the second to last page. I was like, no. I'm not denying it was a great issue and a great reveal, but any discussion about it is just going to be about that. And...
I can't wait to
cut the length of the discussion.
It's just,
I'll read it next week.
I don't know.
Oh, that's right. You haven't read it yet, Trip. So have you been spoiled, Trip?
I have not. I have no idea what happened in More Than Meets the Eye.
I'm really glad I didn't know.
Wow,
really
glad we just didn't drop the bomb there for you. So I
didn't get my comics. It's my own fault. I'll get them.
I hope that doesn't offend anyone, but it's just like, especially for my part, too.
Hey, news, More Than Meets the Eye is good.
I mean, it's good.
What can you say?
I did not understand, like, and I guess it's because I didn't read some of the stuff ahead of time. It was just like, I was not blown away by the reveal, I guess. So, I mean, it was cool, but I wasn't, like, this, like Amazing Spider-Man, I was shaking for 2 hours. You know,
okay, that's a little extreme too.
You know, like I was like explaining this.
That's the sort of reaction I expect from a Tumblr now, JD.
It was intense for me. I don't know why, but it was definitely like, well, I think because we have different opinions of the implications. Anyway, let's get to this so we can talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
So here we go, folks. Again, Spider-Man 698. Spoilers. Lots. Coming your way. If you've not read it, do not listen. If you're spoiled, it's your own damn fault because we told you not to. All right. Who wants to go through this? Chris? I mean, I'm game either way.
I'm not the Spider-Man fan.
I'm kind of excited about Chris McFeely voices, but Chris Triplett is kind of the Spider-Man guy. So
I love Spider-Man, but I like McFeely's voices.
All right, let's go with Chris McFeely's voices.
He's like the only guy that talks in this.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, well, actually, the first surprise for me about this issue when I opened it and discovered that the art was by Richard Elson. Oh, yeah, Richard Elson! You guys know I love Richard. Richard Elson drew a bunch of Journey into Mystery issues, and as I'm always reminding you, he's the guy that did all the best art in Sonic the Hedgehog in the UK in the 1990s. Oh, yes. Richard Elson.
Okay.
Love Richard Elson. I'm on a bit of a mad Sonic kick at the minute from things I've been reading and playing. So I've been reading some old Sonic comics, and I was like, ah, modern Richard Elson art. So that's always a good start. Like, when you open, you're like, ooh. So, anyway, the story opens on the raft, where armed guards race into the room containing Dr. Octopus, who has begun speaking. And what's he saying? He's saying, it says it on the cover, Peter Parker.
Man, that is a creepy-ass cover. That cover is going to stick with me for the rest. Yeah, that might be one of the best covers this year, too, just the look of it and everything.
Who did the cover art on this one? Was it Elson? Or, no, it was Paulo Rivera did the cover.
Yeah, Rivera, yep.
But that art is great. I mean, just everything about that cover is just like, it's like, I gotta read this issue! Look at this cover! What's going on? All right, continue.
I know, it was like your intended reaction is, oh shit, Doc Ock knows.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that I was able to have that reaction, even though this has got to be at least the third time Doc Ock has figured it out.
Yeah.
Counting all mind wipes and
I
reset.
I was thinking that. I'm like, I'm sure he knows. I'm
yeah.
Sure
you
he
find
knows.
Out during the Clone Saga, then he died and came back, and he didn't come back quite right, so he forgot. Then he found out again as a result of Civil War. And then he forgot again when Peter did the mind wipe. And you're like, oh, he's found out again. But as we'll see. We get a quick look also at something that has been skittering around the streets of New York in the last couple of issues, which is this golden Octobot, which repeats what Ock says, Peter Parker. And what then follows is Dying Wish Prelude, Day in the Life, as Spider-Man, surprisingly, essentially just goes through a day. He narrates his life. This is going to be the best day ever. All I've been through, I deserve this, because he's been through a lot of crap lately. He finds a bank being robbed by an electrically powered supervillain named the Destructor.
Stay where you are,
or I will crush fry you where you stand. And then Spidey just punches him out. And then the cop who comes along to collect him is like, "Yeah, it doesn't have powers."
he's a bluffer. She calls him a bluffer.
Which is not a fluffer. That's a different thing.
He's a bluffer.
Like a slang term the cops have for, which is something that would totally exist. I'm like, why has nobody ever thought of this before? Somebody who just pretends to have powers in order to rob a bank, because there are harsher sentences for holding up places with toy guns. So instead of using like toy guns, they use like toy powers, fake powers. There's no laws for that yet.
Good.
Spidey heads back to his apartment. Just sort of is like, just real singing his own praises. It's a good day for Spider-Man. Oh, he's got a little scar on his cheek from when he had a fight with the Hobgoblin, but it's all good, you know, whatever. He's like, ah, Mary, you know, why aren't I with Mary Jane? I'm going to do something about that. Oh, Aunt May's in the hospital. I better go and see her. And I have to go over to work for an interview as well, for an evaluation. He goes over to Horizon. He chats it out. Oh, it's his dream job. And he promises that he's going to just do even noise reduction headphones, new motorcycle helmet, medical transport design box. Is like, he's going to do even better yet. Goes and whips himself up some web fluid, heads over to MJ's, picks up Mary Jane. They decide to go over to the hospital to see Aunt May, taking her first steps with a new cane and everything. It's all good. It's all good in the life of Spider-Man, you know? And then his Avengers ID card goes off. And it's because the Avengers have called him to the raft where Dr. Octopus is asking for Peter Parker, you know, and that's when it starts. That's the guts of the issue. And then we go in for the closing scene where Spider-Man goes in to see Doc Ock, asks for no cameras, just the two of them, keep it private, last moments between hero and archenemy, you know. Doc Ock, they're alone in the room together. Doc Ock says, Peter Parker. Spider-Man takes off the mask and goes, yes, I'm Peter Parker. And Anok says, no, I'm Peter Parker. Not anymore, Spider-Man. From now on, I am Peter Parker.
Oh, what the fuck is going on?
It's so wonderfully. It's like it's not even a big loss, but you can't dramatically take a mask off. I love the way this is staged, where they don't even wait for like a horrifying last page panel to shock you with it. It's the back of Peter's head, as he says. I mean, obviously he's talking in Peter's voice, but I always imagine it as the
That's why I was going for the voice.
His voice from the cartoon, even though that never made any sense because he's not German, he's from Connecticut, you know, but I always imagine Dr. Octopus, the German Ephraim Zimbalist voice from the cartoon. Somehow, Ock has swapped his mind with Peter's. He's got all Peter's memories, and now Peter is going to die in Ock's body, which appears to happen right there on the page as he flatlines. Ducks rush in, Spidey leaves, but it's all in there, and so it's like I got better things to do with the rest of my life. Your shit back together after that. You know, you don't even think about it. You are right back to the first page of this comic, and you are reading this comic again.
No.
I was like, how far back? I was like,
ran to my box and grabbed my issues of Ends of the Earth. Because, like, obviously there's some debate. There's so much to talk about right now. But, I mean, one of the debates is, like, when did this happen? Mm-hmm. My personal feeling is that it happened somewhere between the page where Peter saves Ock in the sinking base and when the body is thrown up on the top of the ship. Somewhere in there, something happened, and that's where the transfer took place. Because that, again, was the whole part of that Ends of the Earth is that we knew that Doc Ock had some sort of plan. There was a larger plan that he was putting into place. And I think if you go all the way back to the beginning of Big Time, because again, this is the end of Big Time. The beginning of Big Time started with Ock testing Spider-Man and, you know, testing his capabilities, testing his smarts, as it were, and that he passed that test. So it seemed to be that the entirety going behind the scenes of Big Time has been Doc behind the scenes building this where he was going to trade places with Spider-Man. It would seem. And so I take that end of Ends of the Earth as being the switchover part, because one of the things that we talked about, and I distinctly remember us having the conversation on this show, was how Spider-Man seemed different in that first arc, that lizard arc that was right after Ends of the Earth. We talked about how he was a little bit more violent or a little bit more willing to kill.
He did lock the guys up, didn't he?
Yeah. And we talked about how he seemed a little bit different. And he was different, you know, after that as well. Like for those two bits, you know, we saw a very couple of different sides of Peter. And we talked about, well, maybe it was the Silver Sable thing. I think it was this.
You could be right with that. I mean, me, right now, I'm simply subscribing to the theory it happened between last issue and this one. Purely because when Ock is checking out Peter's face in the mirror, he doesn't remember why he's got a scar on his cheek. And that was from taking a razor bat to the face last issue. And I think that's just supposed to be our indicator that Ock did not himself live through that. And that's why he had to stop to search his memories to recall that that's what happened. But you do make a very good point. And we did call out ourselves about Peter locking up Lizard and Morbius and the Spider Slayer
make great points. But when I go back and think about it, I was like, when was the last time he didn't seem very Peter Parker like? Yeah. I was like, even with, you know, what happened, you know, Lizard and everything, he still seemed sort of Peter Parker,
but
doing goofy stuff.
But he seemed Parker like.
It's like when I read this issue, I you know, not knowing anything, I did legitimately feel that Peter sounded off. I thought maybe that was just because the script was adopting a slightly over-expository tone, because the story itself is about going over all just the major beats of what is going on in Peter's life over the course of Big Time for people who have obviously jumped onto this as a new issue because it's been so heavily promoted. And I really just figured that it had adopted a slightly stilted tone of dialogue because it had to focus on that. And then you get to the end of the issue and it's like, no, it's because it's an entirely different dude and it's his own voice. It's like, you know, whenever the Destructor says, stand where you are, I will fry you! And Peter goes, my God, who talks like that? And I'm like, you run into guys who talk like that every day. What's...
yeah.
You know, yeah. That's when you... Yeah, but I still never suspected, you know. But then it adds all this wonderful, like, extra meaning to what he's saying. You know, they say the cop says she wants him to come down to the station, fill out some paperwork, and he says, I don't think so because I have a life! And you just think it's like, life is in, like, get a life. But he's like, it's all because, no, I'm alive. No, I have a life to live again, which I didn't have before. And he grumbles about the nerve of some people about providing a free public service. It's just the way he's so vocally, like, expository and out loud speech bubbles that seem a little off about the whole thing. And you understand why, you know. And it's like whenever he gets the message about Aunt May, your aunt's in the hospital, he says, that dear sweet woman, I really should. And I'm like, that's an odd way to refer to Aunt May. And then you're like, oh, no, wait, it's because you nearly married her. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I mean, yeah, and that's what I say. I think there's a lot of – I mean, obviously, you know, again, I mean, even – I think someone on Bleeding Cool was making the point that maybe it goes all the way back to 600. I don't know about that, but
I don't.
You know, and obviously there were threads of it as well. He used the Octobots during. There's a lot of points where it could happen, and that's what's kind of interesting. It'll be interesting to see the next issue.
Well, I mean, this golden Octobot has not been paid off yet. But yeah. What we can at least see here is that it is returning from the raft.
Yeah.
As we see it here, which really, to me, would strongly imply that it did it. It has been scurrying through the city, and then between its appearance last issue, it did whatever it is that it was designed to do and swapped their mind in between these issues. Or, you know, it could be a red herring, and it could be that...
I mean, because, yeah, Dan Slott doesn't do...
...responsible for something else entirely.
Because we know Dan Slott doesn't do red herrings, because, obviously the whole... Miguel O'Hara thing was a red herring. So.
I don't think that's so much what? As a red okay. herring as a bald-faced lie.
How about this? How about that Octobot, maybe it's not being controlled by Otto, maybe it's being controlled by Peter.
Yeah, I mean, that would make...
What if that thing somehow, he was, you know, maybe it's got connections with, you know, the body, and somehow he's sending it to go.
Well, that's how Ock was controlling it. So wouldn't it make sense that he could control an Octobot if he was in Ock's body?
So,
wouldn't it make sense that the Octobot would be following Spider-Man around if he was trapped in that body? Wouldn't, and he had access to an Octobot? Wouldn't he follow Spider-Man? You know, follow Doc Ock essentially around.
Personally, I'm erring. On the side against conspiracy right now.
Here's why I want it to be that far back. Because I want it to be that far back because of all the bastards who have been screaming at Dan Slott about how whatever it is he was going to do, which no one knew until now, was going to ruin Spider-Man, in particular Superior Spider-Man. If it's true that it goes back to at least ends of the Earth, guess what, fuckers? You've been reading Superior Spider-Man.
Well, that is the other thing. That assumes that Otto is the Superior Spider-Man, and I am not buying into that just yet. I am not convinced Otto is going to be the character inhabiting the pages of Superior Spider-Man just yet.
I think it only makes sense.
It would definitely justify the name title.
It justifies the name title.
It explains
why Spider-Man is hooking back up with Mary Jane, because that thread is laid out here.
It's true. I love this scene as well, where it's like, after Mary Jane goes together, Cody just turns to some other women in the barn and just goes, ladies. That seems a little bit more like Peter. Oh, wait, no, what the fuck?
Yeah. So that's why I say, I think it's too good. I mean, again, when I was digging through that issue, again, you see, and of course we all know that's his line, you know, I have the superior mind. So it just makes sense. It's like, damn it, we should have known. It's like, I don't know.
One of my favorites.
I'll tell you, right before I read this comic, I actually guessed how it was going to end before it ended.
How did you do that? I don't know how.
I saw that cover, and I thought, okay, two things are going to happen in this issue. Otto knows that he's Peter Parker, and that robot, he's sending it to, like, you know, kill somebody, like, you know, Mary Jane or somebody. It's a red herring. They're not going to get together in Superior Spider-Man. Mary Jane's going to die in this issue or something. And then I thought, but what if he's a genius, he's dying, what if he's saying Peter Parker because of something else? And I actually, before I got to the end of the issue, it was like in the back of my head, but before I got to that last page, I was like, they switched places.
Now,
I was like, it's like, I don't know if it was like Superior Spider-Man was the back of my head, but I got it before I got to the end of the issue.
Now, I was like, And that is a good point, too, because I do want to point out that what did I say was going to happen? Peter was going to die. Did Peter die? Yeah. Yes, he did.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's true. He'll be fine, but he's dead right now.
Yes. He'll be okay later, but I was right. Peter dies.
Yeah. One of my favorite swerves, actually, in here, it's like even though I could tell while I was reading the comic that Peter sounded off, I never came to that conclusion, because we were all, one of my absolute favorite, like, double meaning bits in here is whenever he's responding to his call from the Avengers, and he thinks, I know the public at large has gotten used to the idea of Spider-Man being one of Earth's mightiest heroes, but I never will. I've always been more of a loner than a team player, yet here I am, me of all people, officially on the world's most renowned superhero team. I need you to take me over to the raft. I'm an Avenger. This all sounds wrong. And I'm like, that's the sort of stuff Spidey has been saying to himself about his role in the Avengers for forever. But then it's like, no, Ox just disgusted that somebody let Spider-Man onto the Avengers. That's the fast double-meaning twist of the dialogue in the whole thing. Like,
you know, another thing that, like, really stuck out to me is, like, when he's mixing his web fluid, he's got the goggles on. And it's when did Peter ever have goggles on?
Oh, but then you see the reflection, and he's remembering, he's grabbing Peter's memories and remembering being a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's that talk of, like,
it's
you know.
Wonderful idea that it's like, although he has triumphed over his
goggles, then it's like, that's.
The thing is, although he's it's not enough for Otto to triumph over his enemy in this way and to let him know it, but also he has to go one better than at everything in his real life as well. It doesn't count that he's just beaten him, like, on this heroic level and essentially killed him. He now has to even, like, destroy his memory of him, because he's going to be better than he ever was as well. It's not enough to beat him. He's got to, like,
he's going to be even a better Spider-Man.
He's got to be a better Spider-Man.
You could say that he's going to be a superior Spider-Man.
Yes, but not just a better Spider-Man, a better Peter Parker as well.
Exactly.
And this just comes down to what I love about this, and a lot of what else Slott has done, and I've said it before, which is that I am so glad Ock is back to A-list status.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I think that will be
barely there. Basically, since they brought him back to life after the end of the Clone Saga, he's just sort of been there. He's had no big stories. He has just popped up on occasion every time a writer has, like, kind of wanted to do something with the illusion of it being big, because, it's Dr. Octopus. But he's never carried any cred at all anymore. His name has carried no weight. His appearances never seems special anymore. Slott has finally taken him back. I mean, he's my number one Spider-Man villain. I love Dr. Octopus. Like, the top three Spider-Man villains are Dr. Octopus, the Green Goblin, and Venom. Not necessarily my favorites or anything, but that's just who the top three Spider-Man villains are. But Ock is my favorite Spider-Man villain. Well, I'm so glad that he is back to the top of the heap.
Let's not miss a part that Osborn is missing as well. I mean, again, that was the last issue that we didn't get to talk about. But I'm just saying, it's like, if you're talking about the villains coming out of the woodwork, I mean, here we go.
I know, you're quite right, but I just don't care.
No, I mean, but absolutely, I think that's true. And, you know, hopefully the end of this will be, like, it'll work out. Like, Peter will come back and he'll be okay eventually, and then Doc Ock will come back and, like, in his prime, you know, like,
there's obviously, I don't think Slott kind of knows better than to try to kill villains, because he just has that, he knows how to play within the rules rules of a comic book universe. Slott is a lot more genre savvy than a lot of other writers are. It's just the way he is. And he knows that you kill somebody, someone else is just going to bring him back. You know, he knows how to bend the rules and play within the system. So I never really believe, I never saw Doc Ock dying as the eventual outcome of everything he was doing. And I was always like, what's the swerve? Where's this going? Yeah. So that's a big part of what I'm looking forward to seeing out of all of this as well. If Ock is superior Spider-Man,
I think he's going to be. I think he's going to be.
I think he will be too. That's too good.
You know, you look at what ended up happening in like 700, you know, in like the 50th anniversary issue. You know, we're looking at the same thing for 700. This is all the prelude to Superior. And as Slott has said, it's like, this is the magic trick. The next issue, we'll get it. You know, he's going to tell us when the switch happens. So we're not going to have to wait too long to figure that part out, which is good. I mean, I mean, it's like, this has been so big and mind-blowing that it's just like, I'm glad that it's like, I'm not going to have to wait for the season break to figure out who shot JR. Topical. Anyway.
Anyway. This episode of Fanboy Versus is dedicated to the memory of Larry Hagman.
Anyway.
Yeah. I love I Dream of Jeannie.
I know. I always think I Dream of Jeannie more than Dallas. But anyway.
Yeah.
You know why that is. But anyway, so we won't have to wait that long. I mean, we'll end this debate. You know, the debate won't go on for a long time as far as
we're not
going to
get into fights about this.
No, and I don't think it's worth fighting. I think we all have valid points, and that's why I say I don't think it's worth fighting about, because we just don't know. We're making conjecture based off all the information we provided, which is very, very little. So.
Here's the thing, though. Speaking of fighting, okay? What's wrong with people?
Good God, yes.
Like, what on earth is there about this story to get pissed about? I mean, the most I could see anybody getting pissed about this is the fact that it just turned out to be a brain swap story, which has been done in just about every 1980s cartoon ever, is pretty hokey Disney movie territory, Freaky Friday stuff. Not inherently special. Very, very craftily employed. Excellent reading experience. You can read this comic twice and it's different each time. You know, there's this one comic contains two completely different reading experiences because of the nature of the way the idea is employed. But what is wrong with these people who are tweeting down Slott with all this hatred about pissing on Spider-Man? And it was just like, what world do you live in, like, where this is something to get angry about?
That is, I think that's, you know, that's one of those things where, I mean, I don't understand the amount of, like, visceral hatred. That's what I don't understand. I can understand being, like, upset or concerned, you know, about a storyline or something, but it's like, seriously, Dan Slott is arguably the best long-term writer Spider-Man has ever had.
It's no argue. I think.
I mean, and the numbers are there too. I mean, that's not just, you know. I mean, he's one of the most successful.
In my time reading Spider-Man, and I read it long time, not like since the 60s or anything, but you know, since at least the early 90s. I can't think of any time from the early 90s to now that's a run that's been as good as this one. And I honestly, going back and reading some of the old stuff, I don't think I enjoy it nowhere near as good as, you know, the next run I could think of would be like the original run, you know, like Stan Lee.
And
that's
and you know, I'm the first one to say that I always get concerned when someone that's a really big fan of something writes something. Yeah. You know, this is the exception to the rule that proves the rule. Dan Slott is about the biggest fan of Spider-Man that you could ever find. The dude eats, sleeps, breathes, lives Spider-Man. I mean, he's probably wearing Spider-Man underwear right now.
There's a 90% chance.
You know, it's like, this dude loves Spider-Man. He's not going to do anything to destroy this character. No. And that doesn't mean he's not going to take risks, because that's what good writers do.
Stupid enough to think that this is a permanent change. You can't be that stupid.
No, I mean, how can... No.
Eat comics for more than 2 months and be that stupid.
Right.
Can't you really? No.
No.
Surely not.
No.
What is there to get annoyed about? Honest to God, that... I don't know.
It's a good story. Just enjoy the ride, people. Enjoy the ride. This is good stuff. I'm excited. I'm like... For as excited as I was before, I mean, I'm legit. I was sort of shaking for a while after I read it because it's just like just thinking about all the implications and possibilities. When did it happen? You know, what is this going to mean? Why didn't I see this before? Yeah, all this stuff. I mean, I absolutely love it. I mean, I am.
I think the best thing about this is that 700 is going to matter. You know, instead of it just being an anniversary issue.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something big in 700, you know, because of this.
I mean, talk about the balls to be Dan Slott and walk into Stephen Wacker's office and go, so I think for issue 700, we'll just kill Spider-Man and we'll make him Doc Ock for a while. You know what I mean? Like, just like, wow.
Like, Dan, I would have wanted to take you seriously.
Like, no, really. What are we going to do? He's like, no, I'm going to do a brain swap thing. We'll have Doc Ock die with Peter's mind, and then we'll have Spider-Man be Doc Ock for a while.
Next, you're going to tell me he's getting back with the Mary Jane.
Yeah, and then we're going to get him back with Mary Jane. You know, he'll have this weird Oedipus Rex thing with Aunt May.
God, is he gonna kill Jameson's dad next? That would be crazy.
That would be crazy. Ooh.
Oh,
see, this could be good. And mirror the time, all the exciting heroic things that Spider-Man
wanted to marry her to gain control of an island with an abandoned nuclear reactor she'd inherited. He didn't love her.
But well,
That's actually the story.
Yeah. So anyway, but it's just, you know, and then you're going to see all the Spider-Man do all these awesome heroic things, but it's going to be Doc Ock.
It's gonna He's going to kill some dude.
It's going to be great.
Yes.
It's going to be great. I'm excited. So, yeah. So send us your thoughts. Tweet us your things. Are you mad about this? Are you excited about it? I'm interested to see.
If you're mad, why?
And that's what I say. If you're mad, why? I mean, I would love to hear the argument and discussion. Most of it has just been.
We need to figure out why people are mad.
Yeah, I mean, if you're legitimately pissed off, let us know. No judgment. We just want to know.
For
like,
a reason other than than the notion that the idea might be hokey.
Right.
For the idea.
Yeah, I mean,
aside
give us.
Maybe you're. Because then you're not mad. You're just blowing your apathy out of proportion.
Yeah. So, but tweet it to us at FanboyVS, and you know, let us know because I'm interested too. I'm interested in getting some discussion going.
Legit
stuff. So this was just kind of mediocre, right? I mean, that's our general take.
Oh, yeah.
It was just okay.
No big thing.
It's just all right.
Yeah, man. Oh, the next issue of Red She-Hulk, that's where it was.
Boy, I tell you, that's where the money is going to be right there. So, awesome. But all right.
But before we get going, one quick recommendation, because I will probably never be on New Soundwave ever again because it just never happens for some reason.
Oh, okay.
Video games. I finished the end of the downloadable Walking Dead video game, and it is excellent. It is awesome. So good. If you like Walking Dead, the comic book, the TV show, if you like video games, I don't know why they don't talk about this on the TV show. There's no advertisement or nothing. The game's excellent. It might be one of the best games of this year. I highly recommend it. Five episodes.
I've not played it, but I heard someone else said the same thing to me, that it has a fantastic
game. It's so good. Oh, my God. I hope they do a season two. It's excellent.
And then they'll be stuck on a farm for 13 episodes.
Yeah.
No. More like one episode.
So, all right. We've gone incredibly long. So we appreciate you sticking with us. And
that's okay. We had a lot of good discussion.
We did, and we missed a week too. So it makes up for that. So again, we're getting down towards the end of the year. So be thinking about your your best of. We'll be discussing those before you know it. So that's coming up. Follow us on Twitter at FanboyVS. Like I said, tweet us your ideas. If you hated ASM 698, let us know why. And we might talk about that again next week, especially as we get into the next issue. That'll be good discussion for that. So also go to the website at FanboyVS.com, and you can get all of our backlog of issues as well. Go back, maybe. Listen to our reviews of some of the stuff, see what we said. Like I said, I know we mentioned on the show, he's been a little more violent. We'll see.
You're right,
argument.
You know, I had forgotten.
Yeah. So, all right. That is our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus...
Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.